Hello, this is Ata Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, November 12, 2024, coming to you from my home studio. And we start on the front page of today's Decatur Herald and Review for Education, Veterans, Heroes Willing to Help, Meridian Students Use Day to Celebrate Service. This article is by Valerie Wells from Blue Mound. Carrie Gordon knew she wanted to serve in the military when she was in eighth grade. At first, her impulse was to join the regular Air Force, but she also knew she wanted to be a teacher, and she found the solution by joining the Air National Guard's 183rd Fighter Wing out of Springfield, where she could serve part-time and still go to school and get her degree. On Monday at Meridian Elementary School, students presented her with a flag used in the Veterans Day program to demonstrate the proper way to fold a flag. "It was very sweet," said Gordon, who teaches preschool at Meridian and reached the rank of staff sergeant during her military service. "I was not expecting it at all." While schools often take Veterans Day off as a holiday, several Central Illinois schools held classes on Monday using the occasion, as Meridian did, to celebrate and thank veterans and to teach students about the day's significance. "If we're going to be in session during Veterans Day, I think it's important for students to learn about the importance of Veterans Day and why people choose to serve and how we can honor them," said Principal Sarah Majors. Students spent the time leading up to the day researching and learning about patriotic themes such as how taps became the official music played at solemn military occasions, the significance of putting up yellow ribbons, and how to salute the flag. Military and those in uniform gave a military salute, while civilians remove their hats and hold them over their hearts or place their right hand over their hearts if they are not wearing a hat. They used their knowledge to give presentations during the Veterans Day Assembly on Monday morning. Majors showed photos of her own family's veterans. Both her grandfathers served in World War II, and Father Ron Stedman served stateside during the Vietnam War from 1970 to 1972. Her dad, Majors said, never wanted to talk about his time in the Navy because he didn't think his 2 years of service were as important as those who had fought in Vietnam or those who had given several years to service. But Majors told the students, veterans, and family members at the assembly she disagrees. 2 years of service is 17,520 hours of serving one's country. Time away from family and friends. She secretly applied for her dad to be placed on an honor flight which transports veterans to Washington, D.C., and he was accepted. She served as his companion on that trip, and while they were at one of the war memorials, a teacher and students on a field trip came along and shook his hand and thanked him for his service. "With every handshake, I watched my dad stand taller," Major said, encouraging her students to always shake the hands of veterans they meet and thank them, too, for serving their country. The color guard duties were handled by Cub Scouts Mason Helfer and Dominic Height. Both in fourth grade and during the national anthem led by the middle and high school choir directed by Jacob Anderson. Every child in every grade sang, too. Fifth grade students wrote essays on Veterans Day, which they read aloud during the celebration. Noah Hall's grandfather served in the Navy, and he said in his presentation that Veterans Day is a way to honor veterans in a respectful way. "Veterans are heroes who are willing to help, and even when it's really hard," he said. I'll describe the photos here. Fifth graders Lucas Sutherland, Jennings Beasley, and Jackson Cross demonstrate the folding of the U.S. flag during Meridian Elementary School's Veterans Day celebration in Blue Mound on Monday. And they're shown, looks like, on the gym floor, and in the background there's a full gym full of students and adults as well, out of focus. And very nice color photo there, Joseph Ressler photos, and a smaller color photo here. Cole Trimble of Blue Mound stands for the Navy portion of the Armed Forces Medley during Meridian Elementary School's Veterans Day celebration in Blue Mound on Monday. He's shown in his U.S. Navy hat, and can't quite make out the ship name, and behind him there are two other veterans standing with their hats on, and it's a very nice photo. Election analysis. Illinois GOP not feeling too blue. Trump halved losing margin. Republicans see that as progress. Brendan Moore, Springfield. It was hardly a surprise when the Associated Press declared Vice President Kamala Harris the winner of the Illinois 19 Electoral College votes just 38 minutes after polls closed Tuesday evening. After that, the state supported the Democratic president. I'm sorry, after all, the state has supported the Democratic presidential nominee in every election and always by double-digit margins since 1992. For Macon County, Republican Party Chair Bruce Pillsbury, who glanced at the statewide results flashing on the television screen early in the night at the party's headquarters in Decatur before turning his focus to local races, things seemed headed where they usually do in the Midwest's bluest state. They kept showing 60-40 Kamala to Trump, Pillsbury said, and I kind of thought that was ballpark probably for where it should or would be with Chicago and St. Louis influence. But when Pillsbury woke up Wednesday morning, it was to an electoral picture that was much rosier and redder for his party in the land of Lincoln. While nowhere close to winning the statewide vote in the presidential race, President-elect Donald Trump had cut his losing margin here in half compared to his 2016 and 2020 campaigns. With more than 98% of returns reported, Harris appeared to lead Trump in the state with 53.8% of the vote to his 44.8%, a margin of about 9 percentage points, and nearly 480,000 raw votes, according to unofficial returns compiled by the Associated Press. Just 4 years ago, President Joe Biden defeated Trump in Illinois by about 17 percentage points and more than 1 million raw votes. Though Harris's lead is likely to grow once more, late-arriving vote-by-mail ballots are tallied. She is on pace for the worst performance of a Democratic presidential nominee in Illinois since 1988, when George H.W. Bush was the last Republican presidential candidate to carry the state. The result reflected a stunning shift towards Trump, the twice-impeached former president who survived two assassination attempts and nearly three dozen felony convictions to return to power in a deeply divided nation. This red shift across the country was more pronounced in Illinois and other states where the 2024 presidential campaign was largely uncontested, such as New Jersey and New York. In Illinois, which leading Democrats proudly dubbed, quote, the rebar in the blue wall, unquote. Just a few months ago, the results represent a glimmer of hope to a state Republican Party at its weakest point in a generation. 8 percentage points in Illinois is doable, Pillsbury said, and especially looking at it for future elections, if you get that kind of turnout for the presidential candidates in Illinois, I think that speaks volumes right there. But at the same time, Illinois Democrats maintain their supermajorities in the state legislature and their 14-3 advantage in the state's congressional delegation. And as early as Wednesday, Governor J.B. Pritzker was already discussing potential ways to protect the state and its most vulnerable residents from a president he called a threat to democracy. Chaos, retribution, and disarray radiated from the White House the last time Donald Trump occupied it, Pritzker said. Perhaps this time may be different, but if it isn't, Illinois will remain a place of stability and competent governance. A look at the results. The red shift in Illinois was almost everywhere. According to unofficial results, all but six of the state's 102 counties gave Trump better margins compared with his 2020 performance. The second largest shift in margin came from Cook County, where Trump posted an 11% improvement compared to 2020. The county, anchored by Chicago, is home to 40% of the state's population and has long been the state's Democratic juggernaut. In the state's largest city, Trump received 22% of the vote an increase from 16% in 2020 and 12% in 2016. He performed best in the outlying wards, which are enclaves for white ethnic first responders, city workers, and tradespeople, along with working-class Latinos. In most of the suburban collar counties, which have helped carry Illinois Democrats to large statewide victories and pad their supermajorities in the past, or in the state legislature over the past decade, the shift to Trump averaged around 5 percentage points. Harris still carried DuPage, Kane, Kendall, Lake, and Will counties, while Trump won McHenry County. Democrats also continued to bleed support in sparsely populated rural areas and smaller communities downstate, continuing a longstanding realignment towards Republicans that Trump has exacerbated. In Macon County, Trump secured 59% to Harris's 40% out of more than 44,000 ballots cast. In Coles County, it was 63% to 35%. Trump victory out of more than 21,000 ballots cast. Clearly, there was erosion for the Democrats in Illinois, said John Shaw, the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute of Politics at Southern Illinois University Carbondale, who said that it appeared as though Trump benefited from a middle finger vote from many across the state and country. Trump has been very skilled at tapping into anger and discontent and even fury of the American voter, Shaw said. And they have not really required him to offer clear and coherent solutions. They have been seemingly comfortable with just voting for a candidate who's angry at the status quo, and they use him to reflect their anger and frustration. National trends were reflected across Illinois as Trump, according to exit polls, improved his standing with his base of working-class white voters and built up more support from young voters and Latinos, particularly men. Illinois Republican Party Chair Kathy Salvi said that Trump's message on bringing down costs and securing the border appealed to a broad swath of voters. She predicted that it could serve as a template for future GOP campaigns here. Illinois made massive strides last night, reflecting the foundation we are building to bring in new voters and compete with the billionaire governor and his band of cronies in Springfield, Salvi wrote in a statement the morning after Trump's victory. Time to get back on our horse and start working again. There's only 727 days until the 2026 midterms. It should be noted, however, that voter turnout was down compared with 2020. Trump, as of now, has about 50,000 less votes in Illinois than 4 years ago. Harris is down nearly 600,000 votes versus Biden. Still, it is a sign of life for a party that has been moribund in recent years. Illinois Republicans have not won a statewide election in 10 years. They are not in the supermajority in the state legislature and hold just three of the state's 17 congressional seats. Many of these factors remained unchanged after Tuesday's election. Democrats, already protected by gerrymandered legislative and congressional maps, used their massive fundraising and organizing advantages to maintain their numbers in Springfield and Washington. Nevertheless, Tuesday's result was the party's first real sign. It is a sign in a long time of moving the needle in what had been an increasingly blue trending state. I think there has to be some encouragement for the Republican Party in Illinois that they may not be as totally dead in the water as they have appeared to be, said Kent Redfield, a retired professor of political science at the University of Illinois Springfield. Perception is what's important, and so there's enough positives out of this that you can go and sell that to people about why they should get engaged, why they should run, why they should give money to the Republican Party. Despite a better overall top line showing for Republicans that was broadly spread across the state, there were some bright blue spots for Democrats in the results Tuesday. One of them was McLean County, where Harris secured 52% to Trump's 47%. This was a 0.6% improvement for Democrats compared with 2020. When a small shift in absolute terms, it was relatively large in comparison to the overall shift rightward. Democrats also took the majority on the McLean County Board for the first time ever, a feat Pritzker acknowledged while putting a silver lining on the party's overall poor showing at a press conference in Chicago on Thursday. McLean County Democrat Party Chair Patrick Cortese credited a very efficient field program where Democratic campaigns from county board to Congress coordinated with one another, which allowed for more doors to be knocked on and the entire ticket to reap the benefits. Makes you now wonder what could have been done had we not been up against those headwinds, Cortese said, but that's what 2 years is for, referencing the next election cycle, which will feature races for countywide office. Pritzker responds. Pritzker, who was a key surrogate for Harris, acknowledged the improvement that Donald Trump had across the country and in Illinois in terms of his margin, while recognizing that the former president won the election and will once again occupy the White House in January. Pritzker vowed to keep Illinoisans, particularly those from marginalized groups, safe and protected from a second Trump administration. The second-term Chicago Democrat told reporters that he met with his top staff and spoke with several Democratic governors across the country on Wednesday to compile a list of things that we may need to address ahead of Trump's return to power. He did not elaborate on what lawmakers may do, but noted that the state has already taken action to enshrine protections into law, including ensuring access to reproductive health and limiting the state participation with federal immigration enforcement. While state lawmakers come back to Springfield next week for their annual fall veto session, Pritzker said any action would likely be done in the new year. Shaw said that if the past is prologue, Illinois going to face some challenges going forward in its dealings with the federal government. I mean, the federal government is not going to be an easy ally for the Pritzker administration, and it's not 100% obvious what the strategy should be, Shaw said. But I do think he's going to look carefully at what happens in California and see what happens in California and see what practically can you do to Trump-proof your state from an administration that is going to be almost certainly hostile. Another consequence of Harris's loss is the creation of a wide open race for the Democratic nomination for president in 2028. Pritzker has raised his national profile significantly in recent years, was a finalist to be Harris's vice presidential pick earlier this year, and is believed to harbor presidential ambitions of his own. Before that, Pritzker has another decision to make, whether to seek a third term as governor in 2026. He told reporters on Thursday that, quote, I don't have anything to announce today, unquote, on a re-election bid, though he added that he has no plans for anything else, referring to a future presidential bid. Shaw said that Pritzker could opt to take his lengthy record of Democratic policy achievements to the bank and avoid any political turbulence in Springfield by not seeking re-election. But Redfield said it would be easier for Pritzker to maintain his visibility and stature in the party as a sitting governor. If he wants to be in the national picture, I think he'll run for re-election and try to have that base to work from, Redfield said. He can go and be someplace representing Illinois, and at the same time, he's representing J.B. Pritzker, potential 2026 presidential candidate. We're on to the local and state here. A two DCF workers killer gets 100-year term, Tony Reed, Springfield. The man who shocked the state when he stabbed and bludgeoned a Department of Children and Family Services investigator to death and was caught after he fled to Decatur has been sentenced to prison for 100 years. Benjamin H. Reed, 35, was found guilty but mentally ill in the murder of 36-year-old Deidre Silas on January 5, 2022, at a house in Thayer, south of Springfield. The investigator had gone there to check on reports of children being in danger. Reed had launched a frenzied attack on her in the home, hitting Silas with a sledgehammer and then stabbing her more than 40 times, while six children aged from 1 to 7 were present. Then, suffering from a cut to his hand, Reed fled with the children and his now ex-wife to Decatur, where his mother lived, and sought medical attention at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital. Decatur Police Department officers had been tipped off, and Reed was intercepted and arrested there before being handed over to the deputies from the Sangamon County Sheriff's Office. The death of Silas prompted calls for legislation to increase the penalties for those who commit crimes against DCFS employees. Governor J.B. Pritzker had ordered flags outside state buildings to be lowered for 3 days to honor the memory of Silas at the time of her death. The governor hailed her as a hero who died in the line of duty trying to protect children Our most vulnerable are safer because she chose to serve, he said of Silas. I can think of no more profound legacy. Sentencing read on November 8th, Circuit Judge John Madonia said the defendant committed a crime that ranked as, quote, exceptionally brutal and heinous, unquote. He had convicted Reed after a bench trial in August. The finding of guilty but mentally ill means Reed will stay in prison serving his sentence until he dies, but the state will be required to provide him with mental health treatment. Boss accused of sex assault of teen worker, Tony Reed Decatur, has this article. Police say a restaurant manager repeatedly sexually assaulted a teenage employee, taking her inside a walk-in freezer during one incident and threatening to shoot her if she told anyone. But the traumatized girl did tell her mother, and she alerted the Decatur Police Department. A sworn affidavit filed by Detective Kyle Borders said he pulled surveillance video from the restaurant that captured some of the assaults by 24-year-old former manager Stephen L. Donaldson. Describing one video from October 9th, Borders said, in the footage, I observed Stephen inappropriately touching the victim on the buttocks near the dishwashing station. In the video footage, I have observed two incidents where Stephen followed the victim into the walk-in freezer. The freezer door shuts completely, and both the victim and Stephen are inside alone for approximately 6 seconds. The girl is quoted as telling police that was long enough for Donaldson to grab her by the wrists while he forcibly made out with her, grabbing her private parts. Borders said the girl spoke of being repeatedly assaulted on different occasions. She described Stephen often waiting for times when they were alone in the store and would touch her inappropriately on her breasts and buttocks. The detective said the girl told her mother Donaldson had warned he had a gun and would hurt her if she told anyone. The detective said, or rather, Macon County Circuit Judge Lindsay Shelton noted the threat and the repeated attacks as part of her reason for denying the defendant pretrial release when he was arraigned on Wednesday. Donaldson is charged with 6 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse and a further charge alleging unlawful restraint. He will enter his plea to the charges when he appears for a preliminary hearing November 20th. Writing in the affidavit, Borders said he had conducted a voluntary interview with Donaldson and confronted him with the girl's accusations and the video evidence. Stephen denied ever touching the victim inappropriately while working with her and could not recall ever being alone with the victim in the freezer, the detective said. Here's an article on the world stage. No coins for Trevi Fountain. Associated Press, Rome. Tourists in Rome won't be allowed to toss coins over their shoulders into the Trevi Fountain. Following tradition, though an elevated walkway now gives limited access to the monument during maintenance work. Rome Mayor Roberto Gualtieri inaugurated the steel walkway on Saturday, saying it will provide tourists with a close-up view of the fountain and calling it a unique experience that won't be ruined by overcrowding. The walkway over the fountain's basin will be able to accommodate about 130 people at a time. But tourists won't be allowed to toss coins from there as the fountain is currently drained and could face a 50-euro fine if they do, the mayor said. City lore has it that tossing a coin into the Baroque fountain will ensure a return trip to Rome. Gualtieri said a small pool has been set up next to the walkway to collect the coins, which are donated to the Caritas charity to fund meals for people in need. The walkway will remain until the end of the maintenance work, which is expected to finish by year's end. Rome city officials are devising a plan to block off the area around the fountain. Under the plan, visitors will be required to book online and pay €2, $2.20 equivalent. Once inside, they will have 30 minutes to enjoy the fountain. Service dogs aid veterans with PTSD. Nick Ingram and Jim Salter, Associated Press, Kansas City, Kansas. After working at a crowded and dangerous internment camp in Iraq, Air Force Staff Sergeant Heather O'Brien brought home with her anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder. A bouncy labradoodle and a Kansas City area program helped her get back on her feet. Dogs 4 Valor, and 4 is the number 4, operated through the Olathe, Kansas-based organization called The Battle Within helps retired veterans and first responders work with their service dogs to help manage depression, anxiety, and other challenges. A lot of time, the veteran with the severe PTSD is homebound, said Sandra Sindeldecker, a program manager for Dogs for Valor. They're isolated. They're very nervous. They won't make eye contact. Some won't leave the house at all. The program involves both group and one-on-one training. The goal is to get the veteran and the dog comfortable with each other and understanding each other. The group takes outings to help the veterans regain their footing in public places like airports. Program leaders also provide mental health therapy at no cost. The veterans and dogs graduate in 6 to 9 months, but group gatherings continue. There is growing evidence of the value of service dogs for veterans with PTSD. A small study published in JAMA Network Open in June looked at a program operated by Canines for Warriors. Service dogs in the program are taught to pick up a veteran's physical signs of distress and can interrupt panic attacks and nightmares with a loving nudge. Researchers compared 81 veterans who received service dogs with 75 veterans on the waiting list for a trained dog. After 3 months, PTSD symptoms improved in both groups, but the veterans with dogs saw a bigger improvement on average. O'Brien, 40, recalled that the camp where she worked in Iraq sometimes had over 20,000 detainees. Violence and rioting were common, and it left her with severe anxiety. When I got out of the military, I just assumed that you're supposed to be on edge all the time as a veteran, O'Brien said. O'Brien's mother spotted the frisky lab poodle mix on Facebook and convinced her daughter to adopt the dog she named Albus. Months later, O'Brien learned about Dogs for Valor, and the pair joined the program in October 2023. O'Brien says she can now go out in public again. She even went on vacation to Branson, Missouri, things that I never thought I would really probably ever do again. Mark Atkinson, 38, served in Afghanistan as a corporal in the Marine Corps. He returned home with PTSD and major depression disorder, causing sleeplessness and anxiety. He adopted Lexi, now 5, in 2020. We're running out of time here. Let's see. Lexi, a muscular cane corso breed, needed Atkinson as much as he needed her. Her previous owner kept Lexi in chains before surrendering her. Since joining Dogs for Valor, the two can get out together and enjoy life. Okay, that's a good spot to end. So we will end this first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, November 12th, 2024. Take a short break and return with the second half hour.